Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. During his visit to the United States on September 23rd, in just a couple weeks, Pope Francis plans to elevate 18th century Franciscan priest Junipero Serra, to sainthood. It will be the first time the Pope will perform a canonization ceremony on U.S. soil. Serra, who was a driving force in the Spanish conquest and colonization of what is now the state of California, founded the first mission in San Diego in 1769. Many Native Americans are protesting the Pope's decision to canonize Serra because of the mission's harsh and brutal treatment of Native Americans. Spanish priests cut Native Americans off from their traditional languages and cultures, enslaved those who converted to Christianity, and introduced diseases that led to the mass extermination of Indian populations. The missions were responsible for killing 40% of all California Indians. 40%. So what is the history of California missions, and why isn't this widely known? In his new book, Cross of Thorns, The Enslavement of California's Indians by the Spanish Missions, award-winning investigative journalist Elias Castillo writes that the mission myth continues unabated, ignoring the suffering and death of tens of thousands of Native Americans. Elias Castillo is an award-winning journalist, a three-time Pulitzer Prize nominee, and a former reporter with the San Jose Mercury News and the Associated Press. And again, his book is called A Cross of Thorns, The Enslavement of California's Indians by the Spanish Missions. And Elias Castillo joins me in studio. Hi, Elias. Welcome to the show.
Well, I'm very glad to be here.
Well, thank you for writing this book. As someone whose family members are California natives, it was very hard to read this book because it's incredibly brutal.
Yes, it is.
What would you say? How many people actually know the history of California's missions?
The reality that the missions were in reality death camps, that's what they were, is probably maybe less than 20%.
Are we talking about like the U.S. population as a whole, or California?
California population.
So less than 20%.
Outside of California, it's not even, they don't even have a hint of what it did. It's just what the Catholic Church has released on them. And in the church's view, everything was just hunky-dory. The Indians loved the friars, and the friars loved the Indians. And thank heaven for the friars for civilizing the Indians. Civilizing them, they had their own civilization. Prior to this, for thousands of years, they lived in a very sustainable way of life, and they had it, like I said, for thousands of years. Serra came here with the intention, one, of cultural genocide. Destroy their language, destroy their social makeup, destroy their way of governing themselves. They were very well governed. You know, they had their own system. But in Serra's mind, that was all the work of, in his words, the work of the demon that had to be eradicated.
Let's talk a little bit about what's happening right now, because Junipero Serra is going to be getting a lot of media attention. The Pope is coming to town on September 23rd. It'll be the first time he performs a canonization ceremony on U.S. soil. And reading your book and then reading headlines about his visit is so surreal, because the LA Times headline, canonization ceremony by Pope will be a first for U.S., and it's a controversial one. So most headlines are calling this controversial. And in this LA Times piece, the reporter quotes a lot of Serra's defenders arguing that he must be viewed in the context of his era and that he made several efforts to protect Native peoples. There's only one line about the brutality and the annihilation of Native Americans in this LA Times story.
Yeah, well, the LA Times is an extremely conservative paper. And they think this, if they knew the truth, they wouldn't be saying that, but they don't, and they don't want to know the truth. And that's one of the, a lot of people don't want to know the truth, but it's there. And in my 7 years of research, which is going through books published by the Franciscans themselves, I discovered the letters that Serra had written. And one of them says in a letter to one of the governors, it says, well, this is the only way to treat these Indians. They're a savage civilization, and the only way to control them is by blows. That's a quote, direct quote, blows. And another letter, he orders the, he doesn't order them, but he asks the governor to, this is regarding 2 to 3 Indians who had run away from his mission in Carmel. And the he refers to the runaways as my lost sheep. And he asks the governor, for as those 2 to 3 Indians, whip them 2 to 3 times and make the punishment last for 2 months. And then here's the kicker. At the end of the letter, he writes, oh, and if you don't have shackles, we have some here, and with your kind permission, I can send them down to you. Raises the question, missions, they're treating the Indians wonderfully. What are they doing with shackles? They would be punished. The Indians would be punished for, as one French visitor to one of the missions, an admiral, who was heading a very major French expedition of the Pacific Rim, visited Carmel 2 years after Sarah's death. And he said, everything we have seen here reminds me of the slave plantations we have seen in the Caribbean. And he said, I'm paraphrasing, except for one word, everything I've seen here is, on the part of the Franciscans, is, and this is the exact word he used, reprehensible. The Indians are punished for insignificant things they do, which outside of the missions, no one would even notice. And then he talks about the whipping. He says, women are never whipped, but taken to a far and isolated place that their screams might not incite the men to riot. He describes them as just the Indians are sort of walking around in a sad trance. When he described them as being like it was that the mission was like a slave plantation, he also said that even the sound of the whip is common here. And then his successor, Francisco Fermín Lasuen, a friar, of course, said, well, these Indians deserve to be, because they are uncivilized and savage, they need to be punished more often because they are akin to a species of lower animals. And then another one, Friar Jerónimo Boscana, who wrote the first detailed description of the Indians' faith, Chinigchinich, that's the name of the what he wrote, wasn't published until the mid-19th century because the Vatican would not allow it to be published. And Valentin Lopez has just arrived here. The death rate, and then finally, at the end, the last Spanish president of the missions, Mariano Payeras, Father Mariano Payeras, wrote a letter to his superior in Mexico City and said, asked him, actually, was pleading him, that we have to do something. We have to come up with an alibi, or else we are going to get blamed for the deaths of all of the Indians in California. And all we have done for them is to baptize them, administer the sacrament, and bury them. We are the ones who killed the Indians. We did as we were told, and where have you heard that before? We did as we were told. And he adds that the Indians thrive outside of the missions. Once they're inside the mission and held there, they die within 2 years. He says there are no more Indians, older Indians. They all have died. And the rest of the letter is along those lines. But this is in effect, the smoking gun, in which a hierarchy, member of the hierarchy of the Franciscan orders, admits, we did it, we killed them, and we are killing them. Because by 1821, Mexico won its independence from Spain. But then the Mexicans came in and treated the Indians just as well for another 12 years. There was no let-up. And then after that, the 49ers came in, and the California government included killing the Indians. There was a militia formed. They sold state bonds to fund that, and the mission of that militia, which was armed by the state, was to kill all of the Indians, complete the genocide of the Indians. And that is little known. All of what I've talked about is little known because the Catholic Church has buried it. They buried it, and they want it to stay buried. They don't want to release the letters. They don't want it generally known about the letters written by Sarah Lasuen and Payeras, and other letters by visitors such as the Admiral from France, Comte de la Perue. The history is there. You just have to find it. It took me 7 years to find it, and I did find it. It is irrefutable evidence that the missions were in effect, in reality, death camps.
Elias Castillo is author of the new book that exposes the truth about the California missions, A Cross of Thorns, The Enslavement of California's Indians by the Spanish Missions. And now I would like to also introduce to the show Valentin Lopez. Valentin is chair of the Ama Mutsun Tribal Band of Costanoan Ohlone Indians, which stretches from Santa Cruz to Monterey and inland to Mission San Juan Batista. And he wrote the foreword in the book, A Cross of Thorns. Hi, Valentin. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you. I know you drove a long way to be in the studio today because this is such an important issue for you. What was it like for you to collaborate with Elias to tell the truth about what happened to Native Californians at the missions?
Well, actually, the book was written at the time I met Elias, and we started talking about it, and I was so thankful to read it because we had been looking for a piece like this for a very long time. You would just find little pieces, odds and ends here and there, but we knew that the story was not correct, was not telling the truth. And we've been waiting for a book like this that told the truth so that we can start, having a campaign to get our true story told.
And it's interesting timing because, as I said, the Pope is coming to the United States in just a couple of weeks, September 23rd, and it's going to be the first time the Pope will perform a canonization ceremony on U.S. soil. He will elevate Franciscan priest Junípero Serra to sainthood. And there was a protest yesterday in front of the Serra Library in Los Angeles, and I'm sure there are other protests. What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, well, you know, it's very disappointing. Outrage, because we know the truth about Sarah, and we know that the story that's told by the Catholic Church does not represent the truth in any way. So how can someone who developed a mission system, and I want to talk about that for half a second here, Junípero Serra was responsible for developing the mission system, and that system included going down and out and violently capturing the native, the Indians, bringing them to the mission, and once at the mission, they were a slave labor force. They could not leave. If they didn't obey, they were whipped. The men were separated from the children and from the women. The soldiers would go into the women's dormitory at night and repeatedly and continuously raped the women, and the same with the children. So how can someone who was responsible for developing such a brutal system be considered a saint by anyone?
Well, and it's important to point out, because this is going to get a lot of media attention in the coming weeks, and I just mentioned to Elias that the LA Times has this piece about the controversial, quote-unquote, canonization, and a number of people are quoted in this story basically saying that Sarah was just we have to look at him in the context of the era in which he lived. And he actually made several efforts to protect Native people. For example, he demanded the removal of Comandante, who failed to crack down on soldiers who raped local women, just as you mentioned. So this is getting out there in the news. I mean, how would you respond to that? And this is from a Sarah biographer who's going to attend the canonization.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, there's one Sarah biographer now who was actually paid to write the most recent book that's been out on Sarah, and so that has to come into question. Now, Sarah may have done certain deeds that did protect the Indians, you know, but was that enough? You know, and we don't believe it was. In Mission Monterey, the Presidio was built right next to where the mission was, because today it's Mission Carmel, but it used to be Mission Monterey. And in Mission Monterey, the soldiers would go in and repeatedly rape them, and so they moved the mission away to Carmel. And the church likes to say that Junipero Serra took a long journey to Mexico City to ask that the soldiers stop raping the women. Well, that's not true at all. Whenever Serra went down to Mexico, he went down there for the purpose of asking that the soldiers be under his control, so that he can expand the Roman Empire, the Roman Catholic Empire even more. He wanted to put a mission down in Santa Barbara, but the governor of California, or the commander of California, wanted to build San Jose, and so there was a real conflict there. And so Junipero Serra, he went down for the purpose of getting control of the military. He did not go down there for the protection of women.
Yeah, and I've got to emphasize that that's exactly what he went down for. He wanted to control the soldiers that were stationed at the missions. And once it got that Serra made the formal protest, the governors, military commanders, they were not called governors, but they were military commanders. They had the same powers as a governor. We're told to control your men. You're going to cause a major Indian war that we will probably lose if they all band together. And that's the danger of what your men are doing. And so the governors reined in their men and told them. It was Governor Fagas who was the first one there, who just basically didn't care what his men did after they were off duty. But then in the later ones, they were told, because of the fear of a combined attack by the Indians is what they were.
I'd like to add one more thing about Junipero Serra's trip to Mexico City. The Catholic Church, if you were to go to all the pro-Serra Catholic websites, they all talk about how Serra developed a 32-point California Indian Bill of Rights. And that's the first Bill of Rights in the United States. But they never talk about the specific points, and they never tell you where it's available or anything like that. That thing right there is nearly impossible to find. And we had a researcher who works with our tribe recently spend a week and a half, perhaps 2 weeks, looking for that document and found it. And what it is 32 points that Serra wrote to expand his control and his authority of the missions. He wanted complete authority over the Indians, and he wanted complete authority over the missions. At the same time, the Indians were starving to death because they didn't have enough food. Serra would not let the Indians leave the mission to collect their traditional foods. He wanted everything grown on mission grounds. And so the Indians were starving. And so, in those 32 points, it has nothing to do with the protection or the security of Indians. But yet all those Catholic websites say it does.
Yeah, well, that's a real misnomer. It's not a Bill of Rights for the protection of Indians. It's just what he wanted. And, for example, Val talks about the Indians starving. Well, they were starving because all of the Franciscan friars he collected in Mexico to come up to California knew nothing about animal husbandry or growing crops. Mm-hmm. And in one mission, the crops had failed so miserably that the Franciscans decided, well, let them have milk. Well, these were lactic
intolerant Indians after a certain age. And so it just made them sicker with dysentery. And these are the conditions that they grew up. The Franciscans were content to feed them ground up corn with water added, which they called pozole. And once in a great while, they would give them some meat. But most of the time, they suffered from disease, dysentery, venereal disease, and malnutrition, and depression from all the punishment they were getting. It was horrible. They were forced to kneel on stone floors, rough stone floors, for 2 hours, and had to go to Mass every 2 hours. If they didn't, they would be whipped.
Elias Castillo is author of the new book, A Cross of Thorns, The Enslavement of California's Indians by the Spanish Missions. He spent 7 years doing research on this book to expose the truth about the missions in California. We're also joined by Valentin Lopez. He's chair of the Ama Mutsun Tribal Band of Costanoan Ohlone Indians, which stretches from Santa Cruz to Monterey and inland to Mission San Juan Bautista. And he wrote the foreword in the book, A Cross of Thorns. If you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. Do you know your history about California's missions? If you don't, you're not alone. Only about 20% of people in California do. Where did you get that number, Elias?
That's just a figure that I came up with.
Yeah.
The majority of the population in California knows nothing about the reality of the missions. It's been covered up by the Catholic Church. If you go to one of the missions, you'll see the signage. It says, this is the place where the Indians came and to learn to be civilized. And they were taught how to make saddles and woodwork and leatherwork and grow their own crops. But what the Indians say, as interviewed by Bancroft, who wrote the definitive history of California in the late 19th century, Bancroft wrote the history of California is 4 volumes, and in there he sent out sociologists, anthropologists, archaeologists of that time to interview people, and they interviewed several of the Indians. One of the Indians says, Asis, maybe you remember, the Indian who said, we were never paid, but we were brutally whipped for reasons unknown. And the descriptions of visitors to the missions, it was terrible. One person said, visiting, I think it was San Francisco, said that they never smile, they never speak. And they look very, very unhappy. Of course they were unhappy. They were enslaved. They had to stay there for the rest of their lives until they died because Sarah wanted them kept free of sin. He didn't care about their earthly life. He could care less about the misery that they lived in the missions. And you can imagine, each mission had probably about 1,100, 1,200 people. You can imagine sewage. They could not leave the mission to go and go to the toilet. They had to do it very close to the mission. Their children, the flies get in that. And the feces help spread disease. Yeah. Every night, every girl over 10 years old and unmarried girls and women whose husbands were away on another part of the missions. These were vast missions.
And hold that thought. We have to take a quick break. We'll talk more about what the missions looked like and the size. Today we are talking about the truth behind California's missions with Elias Castillo and Valentin Lopez. We'll be back after this.
And you are listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco. Matt Martin here with Joe Burke in this brief break in the program, asking for your support for local public radio. The number to call is 800-525-9917 or kalw.org. We're inviting you, especially if you haven't been a member before. It's New Member Monday. We want to bring in new people. If you're someone who's appreciated the work that Rose Aguilar and her team do on Your Call, now is a great time to show your support.
And we do have a thank you gift from one of today's guests with Rose Aguilar. It's the book A Cross of Thorns by Elias Castillo. Yours for a pledge. Call and talk to one of our phone volunteers, 800-525-9917.
Online, kalw.org, you can see A Cross of Thorns, Elias Castillo's new book, giving you a very different history of the missions than you got in your textbooks in school, certainly what you get when you go to the missions and see the interpretive materials there. This is important history, especially at this time when Junipero Serra is being canonized. A really different perspective on the Catholic Church in history and its role here in California. Important history that Rose and her team bring to you. Your support at the $120 level will happily send you, as our thanks, a copy of A Cross of Thorns.
Your support of local public radio helps to make these conversations that you hear every day on Your Call with Rose Aguilar possible. Funding for Your Call comes directly from KALW listeners. Your support makes all of this happen. Please continue to help KALW and Your Call with Rose Aguilar by joining us today at 800-525-9917.
800-525-9917. And here on New Member Monday, we have a special thank you gift, and that is our New Member Pack, which we are offering for any level of support. So whatever level you can come in at, we welcome you. We'll send that as our thanks. All the details at KALW.org or talk to a phone room volunteer at 800-525-9917. Thank you for the folks who are on the line now. We value your support greatly.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today I'm joined by Elias Castillo. He's an award-winning journalist who wrote a new book about the history and truth about California's missions. It's A Cross of Thorns, The Enslavement of California's Indians by the Spanish Missions. I'm also joined by Valentin Lopez, chair of the Ama Mutsun Tribal Band of Costanoan Ohlone Indians, which stretches from Santa Cruz to Monterey and inland to Mission San Juan Batista. And Valentin wrote the foreword to the book. He's got some interesting information, and I'll ask you about this in a few minutes, about the 40,000 fourth graders who take a field trip to San Joaquin Batista Mission every year, and I'll ask you what they learn. If you'd like to join us, if you have any questions about the missions, if you've been to a mission, if you're a teacher and you teach your students about the California missions, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you have any questions about this history, what do you think of Pope Francis's plans to elevate 18th century Franciscan priest Junipero Serra to sainthood in just a couple of weeks? This is getting a lot of media attention. Most articles are calling this controversial. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Let's talk about numbers, because there's no official numbers out there. I mean, according to your book, 40% of Indians were killed because of the missions. But, Valentin, what numbers do you have? I mean, how many California Indians were there?
Well, just 10 years ago, the kind of like what everyone was believing, that it was 350,000 Indians were in California prior to first contact. An interesting point here is that California, the coast of California, was the most populated area by indigenous people north of Mexico City. So California, you know, had the highest population of indigenous people. More recent studies are finding that the population of California Indians was more like closer to a million indigenous people here in California.
Post-contact.
Pre-contact, yes. Now, during mission times, the former, there was a recent article that was published, and the author was Kevin Starr. He was a former librarian of the California State Library, and he's recognized as a real authority on California Indians. And he says that over 150,000 Indians died during the mission period, and that represented 50% of the California Indians. Mm-hmm. So those are huge numbers. And again, they all died during the mission system that was established by Junipero Serra.
And this was from 1769 to 1821.
Yes. I would like to give one more example.
Sure.
People here live, you know, we're on Ohlone lands. Let me use Ohlones.
Yeah.
At first contact, there was over 30,000 Ohlones at first contact. At the close of the missions, there were less than 100.
Wow.
And at Mission San Juan Batista, over 19,421 Indians died. And when I say that over 100, now they ran out of coastal Indians, and they had to start going as far, like in San Juan Bautista, as far away as Fresno, Madera, Merced, and into Stanislaus County because they kept dying. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that coincides with what Mariano, the last Spanish Padre Presidente, Father President of the 21 Missions, says in his letter. Says the Indians come into the missions, and within 2 years they're dead. Now, one of the things that historians generally, because you have a good figure of the number of Indians who died in the missions, and that figure is about 62,000, and that is buttressed by the fact that the Franciscans were very meticulous in keeping death records. So every year they had to file. How many Indians had died, how many Indians had been born, how many Indians had been punished. But what happened was that there was always continuously about 10% of the Indians, this is deduced by Sherburne Cook, a great person who was a faculty member at Cal and went through the mission records and really came up with some solid figures. But what happened was that the runaways, or the Indians were always given 2 weeks to or a week to spend in their villages. A lot of those Indians, when they left the mission, were already sick. And as they went to their villages, they contaminated the rest of those Indians. Then visitors from other nearby tribes would get contaminated, and so you get the figure of my guess is it was far more than 150,000, maybe in 200,000.
A lot of these practices were also sadistic. You write that Indians who grieved and wept over the loss of a loved one were ordered whipped. Indian mothers who suffered miscarriage were not allowed to grieve over losing their child. Instead, they were accused of committing abortion, and at times they were whipped.
Yes, exactly. And again, the Franciscans, including Sarah, who established these policies, did not care about their life on earth.
Who carried... So if Sarah established these policies, who actually carried them out? Who did the whipping?
Initially it was the friars themselves. Now, Sarah may not have whipped any Indian, but he certainly ordered it. He was present when they did it. Let me tell you about one incident, which is in my book. The Indians had run away from one of the missions. They were captured. They were brought back with their thumbs tied together, their babies strapped to their chest. And they took the leader. And then they killed a calf. They skinned the calf. In the presence of the Franciscan friars, they knew what they were doing. And then they sewed up the leader alive into the fresh skin of the calf. Tight, very tightly sewn in there. And then they tied the skin and with the leader inside it to a post on a open field. And they left them there. Now, knowing the temperatures at that time, it was probably maybe 89 or 90 or maybe 88. You can imagine that skin began shrinking very rapidly so that he reached to the point where he could not breathe. And then he suffocated, just died inside that skin. Now, the Franciscans, again, emphasize they knew about the Franciscans. They knew they were probably there when this happened. This is how brutal they were. Many of them, when Laswin came in, most of the time he spent writing letters. Father Gonzalez wants to leave because he's fed up with, and not of those words, but he wants to leave because he just can't stand it here anymore. And then Laswin himself, the successor, said, I can't stand this place. I need to get out of here. And they would blame what they called the savages, for making life miserable for them. A survey was taken of the friars in the missions, that was how the padres saw them. every single mission said, they're liars. The Indians are liars. You can't trust them. They never look you in the eye, because that was not their custom, to look people in the eye.
And yet, in some cases, when they first arrived, before the missions were even built, the Indians greeted them with fruits and foods, and they resupplied
them. Right. Yeah.
Elias Castillo is author of the book A Cross of Thorns, The Enslavement of California's Indians by the Spanish Missions, and Valentin Lopez is chair of the Amamutsin Tribal Band of Costanoan Ohlone Indians, and he wrote the foreword in the book. You can join us at 866-798-8255. What questions do you have about California's missions? If you've been to a mission, what are you told? What do you read? If you are a teacher, and you, fourth grade, I think it's taught, right? If you teach history about the missions to your fourth graders, we'd love to hear from you. What do you teach? Where do you get your information from? 866-798-8255. What are your thoughts on the Pope's plans to canonize Junipero Serra? We have an email from Ruby who says, what horrifying information to hear. I will never look at Mission Dolores the same way. Why is the Pope canonizing Serra? Aren't there criteria that include performing a miracle, etc.?
That's a very good question. There is a requirement that two miracles be performed, and the church has been waiting for that second miracle, and the second miracle has never happened. Interestingly, though, the very first miracle was by a nun who, in 1960, was diagnosed with lupus, and she prayed to Junipero Serra, a novena to Junipero Serra, and she was cured of her lupus. Well, today, lupus is recognized, is known as the great imitator to medical professionals. It's called the great imitator because it is so hard to diagnose. When I was recently telling the story of the miracles to some women at our tribe, and two women stood up and said, I was diagnosed with lupus, you know, and they said, and then it turned out to not be lupus at all. That was in 1960. You know, so is that a true miracle? And then the second thing is they're waiving the second miracle because they're saying that the life that Serra lived was his second miracle. The other thing that they're waiving, interestingly enough, is that they normally have what's called a devil's advocate. And the devil's advocate was to go out and research everything that was that was opposite of being a saint, you know, all the bad things or the things that would disqualify that person from being a saint. There again, the Pope said that they did not have a devil's advocate for Junipero Serra.
And Ruby also says, does the Pope have this genocidal information about the mission?
Oh, of course he does. Given the resources, at some of the talks, I say, either the Pope doesn't know about this or he doesn't care. Either is unforgivable given his resources.
So Ruby says she had such positive feelings about the Pope, and a lot of people are saying he's talking about climate change. He's talking about capitalism and the poor and inequality. He even apologized for the treatment of indigenous people when he visited South America. So what do you think about that?
What has he done? He kisses babies. And he says, the environment is bad. Oh, that's something new? Yeah, the environment is very bad. Everybody is saying it. He says, well, gosh, the Pope has said it. Well, then it is true. Or he talks about if you say you're sorry about an abortion, having it, then it's okay. But what about the important stuff? Bringing women into the Catholic hierarchy. Birth control, nothing about that, which is one of the greatest problems in Latin America. Overpopulation, especially in Mexico and Brazil and some of the other poorer countries. And on top of that, he has done nothing about the wealth of the church is enormous. They still own land here in the Bay Area, all across California, that is unused. It's just laying there.
I would like to offer two answers to what you talked about. we have written letters, as your audience may know, written letters five letters in total to Pope Francis, and they're available at our website, amamutzen.org. But in each of those letters, we've told Pope Francis, we applaud him, and we support and we congratulate him on a lot of the positive steps he's doing. He recognized climate change, which is huge. He recognized genocide of the Armenians, which is about time. He also talks about with compassion about the poor and the disadvantaged. Those are wonderful things, and we support and we applaud them. But then he's done. If you look at his encyclical letter, he almost sounds Native American. He uses the term Mother Earth, and he talks about forming a relationship with nature, and that's exactly what our people have done for thousands of years. One thing about the encyclical letter that he talks about, though, he said it is a sin to destroy cultures, to destroy indigenous cultures, indigenous people, and indigenous environments. And that is exactly what Uniparula Serra did. And for us as well in California. The second thing you mentioned was about the apology in Bolivia. He apologized for the sins, the crimes, and the offenses of the church against indigenous people. Well, what about California? Uniparula Serra was a principal perpetrator of those sins, crimes, and offenses. But why is the church making him a saint? It's just an excuse and an alibi that the church developed, and this is going to come back, and it's going to haunt them, and it's going to hurt them long term.
There's also the fact that in the 1940s, 1950s, there was an attempt by the church to canonize Serra. Very, very few people know about this. And they went through this same process of going, investigating him, and filing and making a report to the Pope of why he should be canonized. Well, there was so much protest by California Indians that the church swept it away. They did not canonize him. Now, that report is not open to the public. It is hidden away, as one scholar said who found out where it was hidden, in Santa Barbara Mission, underneath a stairwell that leads up to the second floor. And that report, they did have a devil's advocate. And I think the combination of the devil's advocate saying what of his faults were, the protest by the Indians, the Vatican decided, let's not do this. And they dropped the whole thing. So now they're trying again. And this time, apparently it doesn't seem like they care about the horrors that he did in those death camps, the missions.
Elias Castillo is author of the new book, A Cross of Thorns, The Enslavement of California's Indians by the Spanish Missions, and Valentin Lopez is chair of the Amamutzen Tribal Band of Costanoan Ohlone Indians, which stretches from Santa Cruz to Monterey and inland to Mission San Juan Bautista. We've got a number of emails and phone calls, so let's just take a few here before we have to end. John in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to the show. Let's go. Sorry. Chukosh, welcome to the show. Hello. All right. We've got a couple emails about the other books on Serra, and Henry writes about one that was published by UC Press. And he says, you know, why are there so many recent books out here? Elias, what do you think of these recent books? Do they tell the truth or are they a whitewash?
No, they're a whitewash. They're nothing more than sycophants for the Vatican. And they're poorly researched. The conclusions are wrong. They put a silver lining on what is a terrible, horrible tragedy, not only for the world, but this nation, that the truth had not come out. Now, if you go to a state mission, there are probably two. One is in Sonoma. They're run by the state. The signage there is totally different. It says the Indians were forced into the missions, they were punished, and they were treated horribly in they're being taught how to make saddles, how to weave, and so forth. But the signage is terrible, if you go to a Catholic mission, and the Catholic Church still controls most of the missions, it's the Indians flocked to the missions. They came there to learn the civilized way. Well, no, it wasn't. The first people that came to the missions were the teeny boppers, the teenagers from the Indian tribes, because they wanted to be close to the Spaniards who had steel swords, cannon, musket. They felt, gee, we join them, we'll get all of this. Well, their hopes were very quickly dashed, and it didn't take long for the Indians to realize we got to stay away from the missions. And that's when, as Val said, the missions decided, along with the friars, to go out and capture Indians and force them into the missions. And in some cases, I wasn't able to find records, but I know the Indians, as Val will tell you, they would go out to the villages, take the children first. This would force the mothers to follow them into the missions. And then the husbands would have to follow because their wives and their children were in the mission. And that's how they were forced. Or they had no choice. The mission fathers trampled their fields where they would normally burn them once a year, and then they would have shoots and other food stuff. And once that was gone, the Indians had a sustainable environment, but it was very delicate, very, very delicately balanced. Once the missions came in, and the missions had hundreds and hundreds of thousands of acres. San Jose Mission, for example, extended all the way up to Oakland from San Jose, and then inland and to the edge of the bay. And each mission was like that. Their herds of livestock at each mission numbered between 25 to 30,000. And heads of cattle would be 12, 15,000. That's enough for a huge, wealthy ranch nowadays. Mm.
We have an email from Serena who says, I don't believe in sainthood, but making Sarah a saint makes me feel as people would feel about Hitler being a candidate for sainthood. It's despicable, she writes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And even though, and even having this conversation, you know, a lot of people, they say, well, let's have a debate. Was Sarah a saint or not? I mean, there should be no debate here. How come you don't see them having a debate on Adolf Hitler? Well, were the Jewish concentration camps, were they good or were they bad? You know, were they saintly or were they not saintly? There's no controversy there. If you look at slavery here in the United States, was that good or was that bad? Was that saintly or not saintly? Why are we having a debate or a conversation about the death of 150,000 Indians whose humanity has never been recognized by the church, by the state of California, by the federal government? These are not people to them. They look at the Indians as being more related to cavemen, some distant species that nearly became extinct, and there's just a few survivors now, but they're insignificant and they don't matter. Our humanity has never been recognized, and that is horrible, and it has a horrible consequence on the members of our tribe today. You know, that whole issue of historic trauma, which we probably don't have time to talk about today, but the whole, you know, I mean, if you go 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 generations where you have no hope, where you have no love, where you have no compassion, you have no one teaching you how to live your life so that you can figure out why you're supposed to be here. If you look at our tribe, we have tremendous rates of suicide, addiction, incarceration, of violence, gang affiliations, et cetera, all looking for identity. Whereas before contact, we had a very strong identity and we had a very strong relationship with Creator. We knew why we were here.
We have to end soon. Do you think that because the Pope is coming, that this information will be exposed?
It's going to be exposed. That's one thing the Pope's visit is doing, is bringing attention to this topic. And we're determined. We've written several letters to Governor Brown already telling him that we want to meet with him and that we want the truth to be told about Native history here in California.
Well, we will definitely do another show on this because I couldn't get to most of our emails and phone calls. Valentin Lopez is chair of the Ohlone Indians. Elias Castillo is author of A Cross of Thorns, The Enslavement of California's Indians by the Spanish Missions. Thank you both for coming in.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.
Thank you.
425-9917 or online at kalw.org.
kalw.org, a great place to look at thank you gifts. You can see Ilias Castillo's book there, A Cross of Thorns, yours for $120 contribution. And you can see other gifts there, or you can just say, you know what? I simply want to support the programming, and we appreciate people who do that. Lots of folks call our phone room at 800-525-9917, and when they ask, hey, would you like a thank you gift, they just say, no, you know what? I simply want to support the station, and we honor and appreciate every single contribution that comes in.
And someone just picked up the phone. Thank you for calling at 800-525-9917 or kalw.org. Support a station that takes a different perspective looking at the news. This is big. The Pope is coming to the United States, and he plans to canonize Junipero Serra. Thank you. And he's in the news. We're taking a totally different perspective. And if you appreciate that kind of programming, we'd love to hear from you. 800-525-9917 or kalw.org.
Just a few minutes left in this challenge. We need to get to 15 calls or clicks here at KALW San Francisco to claim an additional $500 for local public radio. Help us make it there. KALW.org. If you start the process now, it will count towards the challenge, or you can call 800-525-9917, KALW.org.
800-525-9917, KALW.org. Thank you for your support.